Welcome to the radio broadcast of Mount Calvary Baptist Church. Your Bible teacher today is Pastor Jesse Wagoner.
Today I want to share with you asking for directions. Ask for directions. The courage to ask for directions. And it's very, very simple. As I said, very, very direct in its understanding. But at this point in the story, Joshua fails to ask for directions from God. And it leads to another one of those, like, Joshua, what were you thinking? What were you doing? Because we can see it so clearly, can't we? Joshua, if you just stopped and asked for directions, the outcome would have been different. Let's talk about us for just a moment. How many occasions in our lives would have been different if we would have just stopped and asked God for directions before we decided, before we acted, before we reacted, before we didn't do what God is prompting us to do? So I want to start with this very simple idea, and this is a sin, again, not that complicated. Here's what we need to do. We need to consult with God about all of life's issues. The great news is God is available to us, and He invites us to consult with Him. And I'm going to share with you today the four portions of this encounter that are true if you do not do that. You either will either do that or something else will happen. And it's going to fall into one of these four categories. I'm going to share that with you. Chapter 9, verse 1. And it came to pass when all the kings that were on this side of the Jordan, that's the west side of the Jordan, in the hills and in the lowland, and in all the coasts of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard about it. What did they hear about? Well, that's what occurred back in chapter 8. And that was the defeat and the destruction of the city of Ai. They hear about this, and here's what they do, verse 2. That they gathered together to fight with Joshua and Israel with one accord. And these were a warrior-like people. They were always fighting among themselves and vying for territory and power. So at this particular point, they come to this point where, okay, we have a common enemy. Let's come together. We're going to fight Israel. Now, the outcome of that is going to be delayed until chapter 10 because there's this little interlude that results of this confederacy that is being assembled to fight against Israel as they now invade the land. Verse 3. But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they worked craftily and went and pretended to be ambassadors. And they took old sacks on their donkeys, old wineskins torn and mended, old and patched sandals on their feet, and old garments on themselves, and all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua to the camp at Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Now, therefore, make a covenant with us." Now, just to kind of spoil any sort of suspense, I want you to go down to verse 14 because it's the real crux of the matter, okay? And we'll look at the intervening verses in just a bit. It says, "Then the men of Israel took some of their provisions, but they did not ask counsel of the Lord." They didn't stop and consult with God about this issue in the life. These people show up. "We want to make a covenant with you." They had presented themselves as being from a far country. And we'll see how that works here in just a few moments as we look at the verses following. God had specifically instructed Israel and specifically instructed Joshua that he was to make no treaties, no alliances, no allowances for anyone that was living in Israel, or excuse me, in Canaan, soon to be Israel, and that they were to be utterly driven out and destroyed. They were allowed to make covenants with people who lived outside of that land, to make treaties with outside that land, but that was God's specific instructions, primarily because this people group had become so offensive to God that he destined them for destruction. He also said, and that he's warned previously in the Scriptures, that he knows if any of these people are allowed to remain, he says in his statement to them, they will be a snare to you. You will be entrapped by them. You'll be pulled away into their idolatry and their lifestyle and all the stuff that went with it. And the judgment that was upon them would also fall on you. So it was for their safety. Number one, consult with God about all of life's issues or be open to deception. There's a deception going on. There's a trick being played. There's a ruse in the works. And it's because of how they presented themselves. They show up and they said, verse 6, "Now therefore make a covenant with us." Verse 7, "Perhaps you dwell among us, so how can we make a covenant with you?" They're close. They're close to figuring out what's going on. They're asking the right question. There is some suspicion. There's some knowledge of whether they should or they shouldn't. Verse 14, they failed to consult with the Lord about what they should do. They failed to consult with the Lord. And they are deceived. Well, how does this deception take place? Well, it's very, very clear here in the text. Verse 8, "But they said to Joshua, 'We are your servants.' And Joshua said to them, 'Who are you and where did you come from?' And they said to him," so they said to him, verse 9, "'From a very far country, your servants have come because of the name of the Lord your God. We have heard of his fame and all that he did to Egypt. This bread of ours we took hot for our provisions from our houses on the day we departed to come to you. But now look, it is dry and moldy. And these wineskins which we filled were new, and see, they are torn. And these are garments and our sandals have become old because of the very long journey.'" Man, we've been traveling so long, our shoes are worn out, our clothes are worn out, our food is bad. And he is deceived by all of that. Friends, it's as simple as this. If we don't consult with God about the issues of life, we open ourselves up to being deceived. Think about it. Anytime you and I involve ourselves in something sinful, on some level, we have been deceived. In fact, our enemy is the master deceiver. Jesus described Satan this way. He said he is a liar from the beginning and the father of it, the father of lies. In fact, that's basically all that Satan has in his arsenal, his lies. And he's been very effective with it throughout the course of human history. So when we are tempted to say, you know what, in this particular situation, it might appear easier to tell a lie than to tell the truth. It'll be just more efficient, more effective. It'll work better for me if I just bend the truth a little bit. That's called deception. God, who is truth, traffics in the truth, always deals with us in the truth, and we who claim his name, he calls us to be truthful people. We are not to bear a false witness to anyone else. Anytime it looks like, you know, that image that I shouldn't be exposing myself to, rather than turning away from it, if I turn toward it and linger there, that's a deception. Anytime I say, you know what, I'm gonna withhold my forgiveness and just maintain some bitterness in my heart towards somebody, You've given into a deception, because rather than them being your prisoner, you're the one that's become a prisoner of your own bitterness and your own unforgiving spirit. So he says to us, you just need to ask me. The great news is we have God available to us all the time. Now, back in the book of Numbers, we're not going to take time for time's sake to go back and actually read the passage, but when Moses, in essence, is handing off leadership to Joshua, getting him ready, one of the things God tells Moses to do for Joshua is to instruct him in the use of the Urim and the Thummim. Those are two Hebrew words. It means lights. It means perfections. We don't know exactly how this worked, but the high priest had these two objects. Some people believe it was in a pocket behind the jeweled chest covering of the high priest, and apparently that's where it was kept. We don't know how it worked. We don't know how it actually worked in actuality, but through these objects, you could come before the high priest and ask God something, and God would give you a yes or no answer. We think, wouldn't that be real convenient? Wouldn't it? Wouldn't you just like to have a little box you carried around? God is a yes or no, and a light blinks, you know, green or red, so you know. It was something similar to that. And we think, he said, you instruct Joshua how that works. And if he needs to know something from me, just come and ask. Consult with me. We think, well, that'd be really cool if we had that. You have something better. You don't have to go to a high priest. I don't have to go to a high priest and say, hey, would you check in with God for me? You can do that directly. In fact, God, if you're saved, if you've trusted Christ, if you're redeemed by the blood of Christ, God himself comes and lives within you. I've tried to figure that out. And every time I do, a circuit breaker pops in the back of my brain because it's just, I just can't get this one. I know it's true, but God lives here. And he's right here. He's always available to us. All he wants us to do when you have a question, should I, shouldn't I? Yes, no, right, left. Do nothing, do something. Is consult with God. If not, you're going to open yourself up to deception. Joshua is the poster child of all of that. Now, I read some of this, but I want to take you back to verse 9 and look at these next few verses and see another aspect of this. So here come the Gibeonites wearing their old beat-up stuff and their old wineskins and their old moldy bread. And they come to Joshua, and Joshua fails to consult. And by the way, it wasn't just Joshua, it was all the leaders. You see that in the text. All the leadership failed to consult God, and they are deceived by these people. But there's another aspect of it. You see, if we don't consult with God, we can either consult with God about the issues of life, or we can become overconfident. Overconfident means, oh, I can make this decision without consulting God. I got this one covered. I am smart enough, wise enough, good enough that I can navigate through these waters successfully on my own. Just even as I say that doesn't sound right, does it? It isn't, because it's not right. God never intended us to navigate the waters of life by our own. He says, come, if any man lacks wisdom, do what? Let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally. That's what James says in chapter 1. Part of the verse that I'm going to share with you tonight about the peace of God, he says, let your requests be made known unto God. Just come and ask. Nothing's off limits. Nothing's the wrong time. Just come, consult with me, or we will be overconfident. Let's see it in the text, verse 9. So they came to him. So they said to him, from a far country, your servants have come. Verse 8, he said, we are your servants. Wow, that sounds pretty good. We've attacked Jericho and it fell. We attacked Ai, had some problem, dealt with the sin in the camp, attacked Ai again. Ai is defeated. And now people are just coming out of the woodwork from somewhere we've never even heard of. And they want to make a treaty with us. They're our servants. That sounds really good, doesn't it? I think Joshua's a little taken in maybe by the flattery. Not only do they approach Joshua that way, they talk about God that way. Look what he says. Verse 9, from a very far country your servants have come because of the name of the Lord your God, for we have heard of his fame and all he did in Egypt. Well, yeah, he did do some great things in Egypt. Joshua was one of the few that would still remember those days. Pharaoh and the plagues and the parting of the Red Sea and all the rest of it. Wow, yes, these people are respectful of our God. All he needed to do was just say, but wait a minute, I need to pray about this. I need to talk to God. I need to consult with God. And all that he did, speaking of God, all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. Now, those stories go back again into the book of Numbers, and this occurred before the book of Joshua begins and before they crossed the Jordan and so forth. This was on the other side, the east side of Jordan. The Jordan River. So they go back. So we heard what happened. Notice the two things they don't mention. They don't mention anything about Jericho, and they don't mention anything about Ai, the two most current events. Because probably if they did, they might have tipped their hand a little bit. Verse 11, therefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, take provisions with you for the journey, and go to meet them, and say to them, we are your servants now, therefore make a covenant with us. You see, God invites us to just come and ask, Lord, is this as it seems? You'd think he would get a little clue. Notice what they don't say and what Joshua doesn't ask. What's the name of the country you come from? Could you point it out on a map? Which direction is it? You know, all these guys got is a bunch of old clothes and moldy bread. That's all they bring, and that's all it took to pull this one off. I've been working on this passage for a couple weeks now, thinking it through and just trying to figure out how to present it and so forth, and what God wanted to say to us as a people at this present time from his word, what the life lesson is for us. I won't give you all the details, and some of them I couldn't publicly, but Pastor Stotler, Pastor Adam and I have been working on a particular situation, issue for some time and praying about it, and we thought we had a solution, and we started down a path, and Wednesday night I get a text saying the decision needs to be made tomorrow morning for this particular thing. And I just didn't really feel real comfortable about it. And I went to bed, and I woke up, and I looked. I don't know why I keep a digital clock by my bed, but I look over. It was 3:34 a.m. And immediately this thing comes back to me. What are we going to do? And then it finally hit me. You need to consult with the Lord about this. You started down a path, you're not comfortable with it, you don't see any other alternative. So I said, okay, if I'm going to tell everybody else to do this, I probably ought to do this. Lord, here it is. And I just laid out the whole issue and just said, you have to give us some guidance. I don't see any alternative but this one that's not real comfortable and so forth. So I went back to sleep, and I woke up again a little before 6, and immediately running across my mind was, there's the answer. Never thought of that one before. I didn't hear a voice speak from God, but just like, yeah, but I got this other thing to deal with. I did go back to sleep for a while, and then when I got up, I got to the office, and Pastor Adam was coming in. I said, come here, we've got to talk about this thing. And he comes in, and I said, you know, we started down this path. He said, oh, don't worry about that. I talked to the people. They don't want to do it anyway. It's all done. And I said, he says, what do you think we should do? And I told him the story I just told you. And I said, what about this? And he goes, that's the answer. That's what we've been looking for. Just because, at least once, I was smart enough to say, Lord, what are we going to do here? Now, I don't know what your issues are. I don't know what's going on in all your lives. I mean, there's too many for me to keep track of. I have a hard time keeping track of me sometimes. But I do know this. This is all-purpose advice. God says, whatever's going on in your life, whatever it's all about, he says, come and ask me. Come and ask me. It works. It is real. It is what we need to do. And may God spare us from our overconfidence and zooming off in a different direction. Think about it this way. Now, I can also tell you stories, which I'm not going to, but I can tell you stories when I didn't consult the Lord, and then I have to go back and look at the mess I created because I didn't check with the Lord. Do you have some of those stories yourself? Some of you are looking a little too non-guilty for my taste right now. Yeah, we after the fact, we say, if I just checked in with the Lord, he maybe would have spared me from whatever that mess was. But think about this. In my current issue, God can see the future more clearly than I can see the past, right? I look back and say, if only I had of, but as we look forward, God already knows all of the possibilities, all the ramifications, all of the time and energy that could be spent that doesn't need to be spent fixing a problem by preventing a problem. God calls us to come and consult with him. I told you that wouldn't be new. I told you that's not particularly novel, but it is very particularly practical. You think about a week from now. If Jesus tarries and God gives us health and vitality, I expect most of us will be back gathered in this place for worship again a week from now. What if all of us put into practice consistently in all of the issues of life that we commit that we're going to consult with God before we act? Do you think that there's a possibility it might be a better week than it would otherwise? Do you think God might be pleased and glorified more than he would otherwise? Absolutely. God calls us to consult with him. Now, let's move on in the story. Verse 14. Then the men of Israel took some of their provisions, but they did not ask counsel of the Lord. Right there it is. The writer here just inserts it into the text as a bit of editorial. By the way, if you want to know what the problem is, they didn't consult the Lord. Didn't ask counsel of the Lord. So, verse 15, Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the rulers of the congregation swore to them. They did exactly what God had told them not to do. Well, we didn't know. We thought. You know, we can throw all the excuses into our misbehavior we want, but it doesn't hold any water, does it? Verse 16. And it happened at the end of 3 days. It doesn't take long, does it? After they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors who dwelt near them. By the way, Gibeah is about 7 miles from Ai. This was not far away at all. They were in the neighborhood. Verse 17, then the children of Israel journeyed and came to their cities on the third day. Now their cities were Gibeon, Chephirah, Beeroth, and Kirjath-Jearim. But the children of Israel did not attack them because the rulers of the congregation had sworn to them by the Lord God of Israel. Last phrase of 18 is very telling. And all the congregation complained against the rulers. Now think with me. If you know the book of Exodus and you know the book of Numbers, how many times was it Moses and Aaron and the leaders were trying to do the right thing and it was all the people complaining and causing problems? In this instance, it's the exact opposite. The leaders have messed up, and all the people are complaining. Why did you guys not see this? You fell for the moldy bread trick? I mean, how dumb is that? This is not what God wanted us to do. And now there seems to be some pressure. Well, forget the treaty. Let's just wipe them out. It says, then all the rulers said to the congregation, verse 19, we have sworn to them by the Lord God of Israel. Now, therefore, we may not touch them. Now they're in a bind. Number three, consult with God about life's issues or be open to deception or be overconfident or thirdly, or be embarrassed. In this case, it is just raw embarrassment. So as they come to this point, now everything's out. Their people are complaining. They look bad. There's not any good alternatives. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I don't like being embarrassed, do you? I mean, most of us would do just about anything to keep from being embarrassed, especially publicly, and be humiliated. Well, this one looks really bad on Joshua and all the leaders. Because now they start thinking back. All they had to do was ask a couple questions, and it might have been different. And more importantly, did any of you guys remember that you can just go over to the high priest? He's right over there. He's not far away. Just go over there and check in with God and say, God, give us a thumbs up or thumbs down. That's all we got to do. You didn't do that, and now this is on you. How many times in our lives have we been Joshua or the leaders of Israel in that same exact spot? Because it's going to be dealt with. It's going to come out somehow, some way, in some format, between us and the Lord, or maybe even more public. How often do we get ourselves in trouble because we are the ones who fail to ask counsel of the Lord? I found a quote by Charles Stanley, and I thought this was so a good one. He said simply this, because he's such a practical person. He said, prayer is life's greatest time saver and trouble saver. Think about that. Prayer is that for us. It'll save us from wasting our time and save us from getting into trouble. All he says is ask. Now, we won't be doing this Wednesday if we don't start practicing it today. And I would just want to encourage you, you can start right now in the privacy of your own heart. Whatever your issue, maybe there's a question, maybe there's a decision point, something going on. But just make a commitment. Lord, I want to consult with you, just bring you in. And you can even, the privacy of your own heart, right now, right where you sit, you can zone out of the sermon and come right back. It's okay. But simply say, Lord, I want your guidance and your direction on this. If I'm about to do something I shouldn't do, would you please give me an indication to stop? Or give me a clear peace to move forward. Lord, you know more than I do. You know all things. You know the future. You know all that's going on. If there's something out there that I'm missing because I'm easily missing things, show me, because you're a God that doesn't miss anything. And just simply take that issue to the Lord. And then as this day unfolds, simply make that your commitment to say, Lord, I want to consult with you. What should I do? How should I do it? May you give me grace and help to be able to put that together in a way that's pleasing to you. Back to verse 14 one more time. They did not ask counsel of the Lord. May today be a day that would not fit us. May the next days be days that phrase would not fit us. And may God help us to let that be a normal, regular spiritual discipline, that before we act, before we react, before we decide, that we consult with the Lord, we seek the counsel of the Lord. Well, there's one more, and that's the what we're going to do about this now, okay? So either consult with God about life's issues, or be open to deception, or be overconfident, or be embarrassed, or fourthly, or always be in, quote, fix-it, unquote, mode. And you know what fix-it mode is. That's just dealing with the mess that you created from your own failure to consult with the Lord. Got to go back and remedy that. Got to go back and say, I'm sorry. Got to go back and fix and put it together. Try over, start over, do over. That's where they're at in this place. What are we going to do? Verse 20. This we will do to them. We will let them live, lest wrath be upon us, because of the oath which we swore to them. And Joshua does make the good call here. Because they have sworn before God that we're not going to touch these people. Now if they break that oath, they're going to be the ones in trouble. By the way, there's a passage in 2 Samuel 21 where this is referenced again. Saul decides that he is going to, for whatever reason, King Saul, first king of Israel, he's going to eradicate the Gibeonites. And he starts down that path, and God brings judgment upon Saul because of that disobedience. And we know that they go on in history. But so God takes it seriously, and they can't undo the covenant. Verse 21. And the rulers said to them, let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers for all the congregation, as the rulers had promised them. Then Joshua called for them, and he spoke to them, saying, so now he brings in the gang from Gibeah. Why have you deceived us, saying we are very far from you when you dwell near us? Now therefore you are cursed, and none of you shall be free from being slaves, woodcutters, and water carriers for the house of my God. So they answered Joshua and said, here's their answer. Because your servants were clearly told that the Lord your God commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. Isn't that interesting? Even in their deception, even in their unbelief, they knew exactly what Joshua was told to do, and basically they quote the requirement back to him. I wonder how Joshua liked hearing that. Well, why did you deceive us? Well, we knew that this was your orders, and they just kind of read it off word for word to him, which is what he should have done. Middle of verse 24. Therefore, we were very much afraid for our lives because of you and have done this thing. And now, therefore, here we are in your hands. Do with us as it seems good and right to do to us. So now it's fix-it mode time, okay? He should never have been here, but he's got to deal with it. So he did to them, verse 26, and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel so that they did not kill them. And that day Joshua made them woodcutters and water carriers for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord, in the place which he would choose, even to this day. And that tradition, that arrangement, if you will, continued on long into the future. Interesting, Gibeon is actually one of the places where the tabernacle later was set up, after that city came into the sphere of Israel's influence. So they say, you're going to be our slaves. You're going to cut the wood. You're going to carry the water, particularly in relation to the worship of God at the tabernacle. I would like to think that they became believers in the Lord and came into the family of God. I would love that, because God can bring grace out of even disobedience and sin. I found a quote from Corrie ten Boom. If you're not familiar with her, you ought to be familiar with her story. She was Dutch, and during World War II, her and her family hid Jews that were under danger of being captured by the Nazis. Her book that she wrote later is called The Hiding Place, based on they had a hiding place in their home where Jews could be and others could hide from the Nazis. Eventually, they were turned in by an informant. Her and her sister were shipped off to a concentration camp. Her sister died in a concentration camp. Corrie ten Boom was released by a clerical error and released early. A week later, all the people she went to that prison camp with were killed by the Nazis. But she survived the war, and she became a great statesman for the Lord, and her wonderful story. But she made this statement, and just let this ring in your ears a little bit. Is prayer your steering wheel or your spare tire? For many of us, been there many times, it's a spare tire. Oh, everything's falling apart. Lord, would you get me out of this mess? May God let it be that which steers us and directs us. May God give us the grace and courage to ask Him for directions in life. Consult with Him in all of life's issues. What in your life needs God's consultation right now?
You've been listening to the radio broadcast of Mount Calvary Baptist Church in Charleston. Mount Calvary Baptist Church is located at 1509 Bigley Avenue in Charleston, West Virginia. Worship services are at 9 a.m., 11, and 6 p.m. For more information, contact calvarywv.com.